Blog Talk Radio.
Well, I don't know about you, but I'm learning a lot in quarantine. For example, red wine goes with everything, including coffee. I'm Brett Singer. This is my show. Welcome, welcome, welcome to Brett from the Bunker. It is Monday, May 11th, 2020. I feel like I need to say even the year because sometimes we don't even know what year it is. I don't know about you, but that definitely happens to me. And I am joined today by Sharia Mattis. Sharia, how you doing?
Hey, how you doing? I'm
Yeah, because my first question is always, how are you holding up? So that is my question to you.
I mean, I guess that's the first question, so I will not immediately start crying. I'm all right. I'm actually all right.
Okay. I was going to say, it's a potentially loaded question, but I don't want to make anyone cry.
It has been hard. You know, I've had a few, like, family deaths and family friend deaths.
Oh, no.
And, yeah, it's been a nightmare. But it's calming down now. I had to move. It's calming down now. Everything's all right. I have my health. I'm pretty blessed, considering, you know what I'm saying? So I'm good. How are you doing?
Say,
how are you holding up?
I'm doing all right. You know, I mean, you fall into a routine. I mean, I think I could actually write out exactly what I do on almost every single day because it's just the same thing. Like, I get up around the same time. You know, it varies a little, but pretty much around the same time. I sit down. I do a thing called Morning Pages that I don't know if you know that. That's I got it from Joe DeVito, the comedy writing teacher.
Okay.
He got it from Julia Cameron. And it's you just sort of sit down and write three pages of whatever pops into your head. You know, it just doesn't matter whatever's out there. And, you know,
wow.
I drink my coffee. I sit, whatever. I do this show. I watch a little Cuomo. And it varies. Some days there's an open mic at noon. Some days there's not an open mic until 4 or 5. You know, it's just go to bed around the same time. It's a very, very routine. I mean, someone compared it to Groundhog Day, and I think that's very accurate. It's really the days really do start to run together.
I see. The days do run together for me, but it hasn't been as simple as all that. I've been kind of doing up and down. Sometimes I cry at noon, sometimes I cry in the morning. I try to keep it fun, keep it varied, you know. So I don't know, it's been different, like the mics and everything. I like to do the virtual mics. Do you ever get so, like, post virtual mic sadness? When you realize
what do you mean? I don't think so.
Like even a good mic, I'll do a virtual mic and then everyone's like bye, and it's not the same, like, post mic camaraderie that you would have.
It's nice to not be commuting, you know, like, I mean, it's,
yes.
although I actually kind of miss my commute. People who listen to the show have heard me say this way too many times, but I'll say it again, I use the commute to watch my dopey superhero CW shows. And so I'm way behind on those because I don't have the commute anymore. I used to watch them on the bus. So I kind of miss that, but, you know, I mean, it's nice. You just pop in, you roll in, you get on your computer, you do it. And I don't know, look, obviously I miss everything about the real world. I miss, you know,
yeah,
moving around all day, for God's sake. I mean, I'm stuck inside. I took a walk yesterday for the first time in a week. I got to start doing that a little more often.
Yeah. Oh God, before they take that away from us, I think other people might screw up the daily walks for us.
No, we can't mess up the walk. All I got is my walk. That's, you know, I mean, and it's not even every day for me. Do you take a walk every day?
I was taking a walk every day, but, like, I've noticed, like, people are not, like, following the guidelines at all. I think I have to take, like, a broomstick around with me and just beat people. I really do. They do not care. Like, I'm like,
no.
Listen, I'm crawling with it. I must be. I'm living in Brooklyn. I mean, it's just like, there's just no way that, like, I just feel scared that I'm going to infect everybody or that they're going to infect me. Some old guy hawked a loogie right in front of me when I was taking a nice walk. I know. I was like, y'all are crazy. Like, I don't know. I mean, but I will say the one thing I am really loving is not going to work. I love not working. It has been great for my self-esteem.
When you had a work to go to, what was your work?
Well, I was a professional server at an Italian restaurant. I was pretty terrible at it as well. So it's not like I was great at it, but I definitely did get yelled at quite a bit for kind of stupid things. And it was just like, and the commute was bad. I don't miss the commute. I love that you miss your commute. I do not miss my commute at all whatsoever. I don't miss my commute.
It's a weird thing. Like, I freely admit that, it's an odd thing to miss, but it really is just that that's when I would watch this particular slice of television, and in the absence of that, like, I've actually missed some episodes, and it's just like, okay,
you
know, I mean,
you
I
feel your butt.
Not a big deal.
You feel your brain cells starting to come back just a bit? They're just regenerating.
Listen, superhero television is very important for brain function. Everyone knows that. There are studies. I think there was one from Harvard that specifically said we should be very, very conscious of our superhero television. So
I don't know. I watched like a little bit of The Flash because there's a black girl in it. And I was
Do you have any idea how important that is? I did not, but that's really interesting. So you watch a little bit of The Flash because there was a black girl in it. Go on.
Yes. I was like, because I'm really big on like having black female, like unambiguously black female representation in TV. But I was like, I don't deserve this. I don't need to sit through this for.
I don't blame you. I am in no way suggesting that you should be watching The Flash if it's not your thing. That being said, on my other podcast, Comics Who Love Comic Books, I had a terrific guest on, Dimitri Wijesinger. I don't know if you know him. He talked about Iris West, the character in the comics, was white. And so they decided to cast her with a black woman. But it goes deeper than that, because not only that, but she's black, her father is black, and they adopted Barry. So Barry technically has a black father. You know, so that's really interesting. Now, based on that, he's also technically married to his sister, but we don't like to talk about that.
I didn't get that far. I was just like, there's some weird sexual tension, and I'm uncomfortable. So, I know where I was with that. But, you know, I'll give it another chance. I watched Steven Universe and trash television. I can't really judge you at all. I watch children's films and Korean dramas. That's what I've been watching since the quarantine.
Korean soap operas?
Hell yeah!
I don't know anything about that. Tell me about that.
Oh, you see, you made a mistake. You know what this is? You just activated the guy in the back of the class that talks about trains all the time. You just activated that inside of me. You've made a huge mistake. It's great because it's like living in a world that is nothing like this. That's what it is, and it's just like very good-looking people speaking a very beautiful, sonorous language and slapping each other with kimchi. It's amazing. It's just amazing. And I highly recommend like going on Netflix or Hulu or whatever and just watching as many Korean films and Korean dramas as you possibly can stomach. Really. And there's so
I mean, this is very much a thing. So just to, you know, I Googled Korean soap opera, and it's a Korean drama. You were right. I don't mean to call it a soap opera. But there's the second link is the 25 best Korean dramas. 25.
Ooh, what did they say were the 25? I might, because like my favorite.
You want me to start at the top? The Greatest Love
What's
is
the number one.
One. Number one is The Greatest Love is number 25.
The Greatest Love. Okay, that was actually a good one. That's an old one.
Okay, so you know these. Once there's 25 of something, I go like there's what is your favorite? Oh my God! Look at the length of this list. The number one is My Love from the Star.
I love that one, but this must have been made before. I love. Yeah. like something like that. It's so good. It's about this like alien, hot alien that comes to Earth and like he falls in love with a hot movie star, and it's like a tragic. They have to find each other. That one is great. That one is great. That's actually a really great one. But it's an old.
You're saying
one.
The one I just said, My Love from the Star, is about an alien.
Yes, it sure is. It's about a hot alien.
I got to admit, I'm curious.
Yeah,
number four is My Girlfriend is a Nine-Tailed Fox.
I love that drama. That is a great one. Okay, so that is a great one. That's number four. That is a great one. That one is what's his name? I can't remember his name. He used to be really big. He had like a song that was really hot too. He used to date another Korean pop star. But anyway, he's like a cute guy, and she's a Gumiho, which is like
Gumiho,
a nine-tailed
there
fox.
You go. Yeah, Gumiho.
Gumiho, it's like a special fairy tale creature that I've only heard of in like Asian like folk tales or whatever. And she apparently is supposed to be evil, and she like lives forever, but she's not evil. She just eats a lot, and she's really silly and beautiful, and they fall in love, and again. It's a tragic for a little bit, and then they come back together. This is all Korean dramas kind of have to follow the same formula, but they can go anywhere within that. Like, it's pretty good.
Wow.
That's a good one.
Let me pull my best Owen Wilson. Wow.
You know what? You really do sound like Owen Wilson.
It's surprisingly easy. I don't really do impressions, and that one I discovered that like by accident. It's wow. It's weirdly easy. But I may have found a new thing. Like my wife and I, we just finished The Crown, which we love. Which is monumentally white, but period appropriate white. It's not white the way – it's not white – like in the story they're telling, there really aren't any black people, which you can say is enough of a reason to say like, nah, I don't want to watch that. But at the same time, you know, it's not like they're leaving them out. It's not like Friends. Like, you know, like something like Friends, there are black people in New York. They're just not on that show, you know?
That's apps, Friends, or How I Met Your Mother. Those are
yeah. It's like hey guys, remember that you live in New York?
That's like a white person see of New York. There are no minority. It's just the big buildings.
What's amazing is that it's amazing how we just didn't notice. Like, because that was, you know, and I'm saying we, and by we I mean white people. That was television. That was it. That was what that, you know, we were just sort of like, oh yeah, this is great, you know. And then you look at it now, and it's like, oh, where's the black people? I don't understand.
Oh my God, Brett, I love you right now because I complain about this constantly, and everyone's like, here you are, shut up. But like,
true.
It's
objectively true, and it doesn't make any sense because you look at this is almost a hack example because it was such a big deal. But you look at a movie like Black Panther, and how it just destroys everything. Like, you know, Black Panther did, like, it didn't just do well for a Marvel movie. Like, it did well beyond all, you know, reasonable expectations. But I knew people who said, you don't understand what this is going to mean to black people before it even came out. And then it did, and it was, you know, like, oh, wait a minute, you make a movie with you know, an almost entirely black cast, and it's going to blow up? Yeah, I guess so, you know?
I'm telling you, I saw that movie in Hat Yai, Thailand, which is, like, on the border of Malaysia and Thailand, and I was for sure the only black person in the theater, and I sobbed hysterically as multiple Thai and Malaysian people came up to me afterwards.
Like, are you okay?
How I had been sobbing, why I was sobbing at the end of this movie, and I didn't know how to explain. Like, I just don't see a lot of black people. I just didn't explain it. Like, it was so powerful just to see black people on screen doing things. It's so silly, but it kind of is. Like, it's why Tyler Perry got so much money. He built an empire off of terrible movies just because people are desperate to look at black people.
Right. Well, I was going to say, like, because I mean, I'm glad you said that, because I mean, I sort of, I would be willing to accept that maybe it's just not for me. But I mean, every time I see even a snippet of a Tyler Perry thing, I'm kind of like, ooh, you know, what are we talking about here?
The black community has decided to rally around Tyler Perry to say, no, these are good movies, just don't watch them. So I think you might have to cut this part out.
This is live. We're all live.
We're all
so.
Supposed to pretend that these are good movies, I think.
I mean, the thing is, like, those movies do fine. They don't do, like, Black Panther numbers. Like, I mean, I like to think that Black Panther had, you know, the mighty Marvel machine behind it, and also was a really, really good movie. I've seen it a bunch of times. I'd sit down and watch it right now. It's a great movie.
It's an objectively good film, and black people are in it, and then that turns into box office dollars, and it's so weird how they just don't. Like, I figured after Black Panther, like, oh, we're going to get a slate of just constant, like, black people films. And it just didn't happen. I don't know. My conspiracy theory brain is going off. I think it's the government and the chemtrails or something. I don't know why. But it doesn't make any sense. Like, we need more black folks in movies. I'm glad that you're on this train with me, Brett. I'm
100%. Absolutely. I mean, look. First of all, when it comes to, this is a little different, but when it comes to the superhero movies, I'm going to see them anyway, so I just assume they'd be good. You know, like, I even saw Aquaman. Aquaman was a terrible movie, but I saw it because it's a superhero movie, and that's what I do. I see the superhero movies. So somebody like Black Panther comes along, something that I can watch five times and be happy, and I can show to my nephew, and I can, but I also think that it matters. Like, the representation is really, really important, that you have a movie like that, and you have a kid who grows up seeing it, and they don't think it's weird to have black people in a movie. Like, there's a cartoon version of the Justice League, and they use a black character as Green Lantern. And so my kids grew up with that. So they see Green Lantern as black. They don't think they think it's weird when he's white. And it was really interesting to see that. It's because it's a function of is what they grew up with. That's it.
I mean, really, and you know what's funny? Like, I grew up in the 90s, so there was actually a ton of black film, like, black media representation in the early 90s, early to mid-90s. Like, it was, like, UPN, I don't know if you remember, like, WB, do you remember any of that stuff?
Yeah, of course.
So there were all these black shows, like Moesha. I remember Cinderella, the Rodgers and Hammerstein Cinderella with Brandy.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that. That's right.
Oh, I could never forget about that. grew up with black Cinderella, and it was so beautiful to me. And then, like, the shift happened in kind of the late 90s, early 2000s, and all the black people left the media. And I think it was such a huge change for me that it has stuck in my mind ever since. Now I cannot enjoy anything without screaming, "Where are the black people?"
You should. It's important. If people say it, then maybe someone will listen. I mean, you know, that Black Panther. I mean, Black Panther is a thing. Like, Black Panther is a character that goes all the way back to the 60s, and they had tried to make a movie for a while. It just never quite happened. They needed the sort of Marvel thing to come together, and it finally did. And lightning struck, and it was amazing. And you know, I'm sure we're going to get a second one at some point. I think thankfully they're not rushing it. I think it's better that they wait until they know what story they want to tell, and you know, don't just throw it all together. But I wish I could sort of say, like, well, I think it's because of this, but I think there's no good reason for it. I think it's just people being short-sighted and not using more of the world in their movies.
Same. I think people just can't. They just don't have the vision. The people that are in charge largely don't have the vision, and they don't know how to tell. Often you'll ask them, like, well, why didn't you, like, when they asked Lena Dunham, like, how come all the girls are white girls in Brooklyn? And she was like, I just don't know any black people, and I don't really know how to tell their stories, and I don't want to hire any.
What was you going to say? So hire a writer, Lena Dunham. I mean, come on. I mean, what do you want? I mean, by the way, you know who did that? Mel Brooks. When he made Blazing Saddles, he hired Richard Pryor.
Oh my God. Like, even, and you know, it's so funny because I just said, okay, the 90s, but also I grew up on the Pryor, like, I'm so tired. I haven't had my coffee.
Gene Wilder.
Gene Wilder movies.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm gonna be white people. I'm sorry. I love Gene Wilder.
Oh no, Gene Wilder's great.
I grew up on like Stir Crazy and like all those movies, and I've always kind of expected to see black people prominently featured in the media. And then when I started to come to my own kind of media consciousness, there were none, and it kind of flipped the whole thing upside down. And I think it's like, yeah, it's short-sightedness, but like you could look further back and see how well it works when you have a diverse cast. Like it works. You need diverse points of view to make a decent story. Like, it's important, I think.
I totally agree. I think 100%. I mean, there was a movie, I think it was The Best Man, that this goes way back.
Oh,
I want to say
yes.
mid 90s. It's Malcolm Lee, right? Spike Lee's brother.
Yes.
And I remember seeing it in theaters and being like, oh yeah, it was a similar experience to Black Panther. I mean, just to a much lesser extent, obviously, but where it was like, oh, an all black cast. Isn't that interesting? This is a version of a story. Like, there's no reason why you can't tell more stories like this. This is a wedding with black people, and it's just, this is it. And I thought it was cool to see something that I hadn't seen before.
You know, they made a sequel, right?
Yes, they do. Well, didn't they? Oh, is there a sequel, isn't there more than one? Isn't there a Holiday, or is a Holiday the sequel?
You absolutely right. I don't know. I think The Best Man Holiday is the sequel.
Is the sequel, okay?
But then again, I don't know. They're not great films, but they are. I do remember. Those
I thought
movies.
It was fun. I really thought. I just, you know, again, I'm not suggesting that it was, like, you know, it's not Black Panther. I mean, it's not what we're talking about.
And it's
but...
not Citizen Kane. But it is
No. But it was an enjoyable movie.
Yeah,
it was a very enjoyable movie.
I love the rom-com. I love. There's a Sanaa Lathan is in that. She was like the queen of like the black girl rom-coms for like the 3 years that they were making them, and I was obsessed with those things. And they're not great. They're not masterpieces. But I love just seeing black people in kind of non-extraordinary situations, just kind of like living their lives, you know. I think that can sometimes be the most revolutionary thing of all, just being black people just hanging out.
Let me give you some numbers though. The Best Man, $9 million budget, $34 million box office. Best Man Holiday, $17 million budget, $71 million box office.
Bro,
those are nice numbers.
Those are great numbers. Like, Girls Trip 2. Girls Trip was made on, like, $5 and made so much money. Like, and
well, Girls Trip was a huge hit.
It was
is that
huge.
The same, is that
it
the same
huge.
Director?
Is Girls Trip the same director?
No. I don't know. I'm looking.
Oh, no. I'm just thinking of, like, black.
Producer. No, yeah, it is the same director. Malcolm Lee.
It's the same director?
Yeah, same director. $20 million budget, $140 million box office.
Bro, like, what? Like, it's
that's
so great.
That's nuts. Anyone would be happy to have that
for representation, really. And it's so silly. Like, producers are like, I don't know. It's very strange. I think we should investigate. I think you and I should, you know, investigate. I think we'd make a good Gene Wilder, Richard Pryor team.
Let's go for it. I love it.
Let's investigate this conspiracy.
I love it. Let's get those scripts. It's good stuff. It's good stuff. Go ahead.
No. I'm interrupting you. I just wanted to know more about you since we're gonna do this this comedy buddy cop film or whatever.
Exactly. I am very white. I am very Jewish. Those are hallmarks of comedy. I used to talk a lot about that in my stand-up, but I don't really anymore, just because it's a little, you know, you don't want to get into a hacky, like, hey, kind of thing going on. Because we don't really know each other. This was Rebecca Kaplan suggested it, right?
Yes, I love her. I love Rebecca
Kaplan. Rebecca's the best. She is truly wonderful. She's
lovely.
So tell me more about you. Like, how did you get into comedy?
I don't know. So, like, for a long time, I was, like, a comedy nerd, right? Like, I used to marin, like, a minor. And I, you know, I used to go to, you know, comedy shows and all these things, but I had massive anxiety and depression, and to the point where, like, it was just not even feasible for me to even think of going on stage. And then, you know, I traveled for a bit, and I discovered, like, the comedy scene in Hanoi and Bangkok and stuff.
Oh,
like,
wow.
That. And I still was too scared to go up. I just was like, I just would go and go to the open mics and be like, I could definitely do this, and then not do it. And then I kind of got, like, through circumstances, thrown back here after 5 years in Asia. I came back here and I was like, you know what? It was such a crazy story. It's a long ass story about how I ended up back in America. But anyway, I ended up back here and I was like, you know what? There's no excuse now. I need to do it. And then proceeded to, again, not do it for another month. And then finally I did it. I finally got back. I went to LA and I finally did some open mics and I was like, there's no turning back now. So I've just kind of been going full steam ahead since then. I was getting booked. I was doing well. I was writing and doing. And then this hit. Like, I'm pretty new. And then this hit. And then it's just kind of like, whew, wish I hadn't waited so long to get into this game. Because I'm worried about the future of comedy, like, post-corona. You know what I mean? Like,
sure.
This in the kissing booth industry, it's the hardest hit industries. it really is. Like, to gather all these people in the room and have people spitting on mics and holding mics.
Yeah, no, if one comedian gets it, we're all toast. I think people are going to be bringing their
mics with
them.
That's right.
A lot of people bringing their mics. I have a mic, so I'll definitely be bringing it when we get back. I mean, although at this point, who the hell knows when that's going to be? I mean, I don't like to speculate, but I don't think it's going to be soon.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to be soon. And I think it's so funny. You're so, like, zen and adaptable with this. And I have just been like, I miss telling my most vulnerable jokes to unlistening white men on their phones. I miss it. I miss it so much. I miss it. The first time I get heckled again, I'm going to kiss them on the mouth, I think. I miss it. I miss it so much. All the things that I hated, I miss so much, you know.
Unlistening white men on their phones. Love it.
That's
love
what it is.
It's hard. I mean, I'm lucky. Most of the open mics I go to, like, I host an open mic at the Comic Strip, which, you know, I think people pay attention during. And I go to Felicia Madison's mics at Westside Comedy Club, and people generally pay attention. Yeah, people pay attention during those. Although, you know, not exclusively. I mean, I've even been guilty of looking at my phone. It's hard to not look at your phone. It's kind of ridiculous how difficult it is to not look at your damn phone. But,
the point is to get people to listen to the nonsense that you're saying more than the vast things of knowledge that they're holding in their phones. Like, you're holding every avenue of information in the world in your phone, and you're supposed to listen to my black ass talk about, like, my boobs and my mom. Like, you know what I mean? You have to. That's the challenge. You know what I mean? That's the challenge. That's how you make the best jokes, because you have to force them to listen. You know? I don't know.
Do you seek out mics? Do you seek out mics that are with more people of color?
I mean, that's hard to do anyway.
I don't know what there is. I mean, I keep hearing about mics up in Harlem and stuff, but I've never gone.
Yeah. But I'm in Brooklyn, and, like, I usually stick to, like, the Brooklyn mics, and then on the weekends do, like, the Lower East Side, and, you know what I mean? I'll do the West Village and the Lower East Side. I'll do those, like, standard mics. But because I'm queer, so I tend to go more to the queer mics, and, like, those tend to be a bit more welcoming and opening and diverse in those ways. But I've noticed that I really need those, like, what some of us dub the toxic mics. I need those mics. I need the mics full of rooms of straight white dudes to be better. I really do.
Really? Like, so if it works for you. It helps you.
It works for me. I need a balance, right? I need to go to the queer mics because I need community, and I need people who are going to listen so that you can – because if no one's listening, you can't change anything because you don't know what's going on, right?
Right. You don't get any feedback. You just know, yeah.
You don't get any feedback. But once I've honed it a little bit, then I like to go to the mics where it's a lot tougher, where people are less likely to listen. And that tends to be where I feel like I'm on fire. The riffs are working better and all that stuff is working better because of the challenge. Because I know nobody cares what I'm about to say. And so I have to make them care. And that tends to be, I like the balance of that. But every once in a while, I mean, like I did like Harlem Nights and like one of those, but like I didn't do them as much as I wish I had. I was so, you know, I was like, oh, it's going all the way to Harlem. It's so
well, it's a pain. I mean, to be fair, I mean, it's a schlep. I mean, one of the reasons I don't go is because it's a schlep for me, and I'm in Manhattan, so it's not nearly as much of a schlep as it'd be for Brooklyn. By the way, Brooklyn, I keep meaning to get out to Brooklyn, and then I'm like, it's a schlep. I don't really want to go out that far.
I mean, after this, once they let us off punishment, you going to see me at all those mics. I will be uptown, downtown, everywhere. I do not care. I do not care. I'll come to your house and tell jokes in front of your kids. I don't care.
I had the same thought. I really did. I very much was thinking, you know, like all those things that I didn't do, you know, because it's too far. It's too far. Like I meant to get headshots, and I'm very uptight about my appearance. And because I haven't aged well. And so I haven't gotten one. And it's silly because now I need a picture. Like, of all the times, like, now I really do need a picture. I keep coming up with things where they're like, oh, we need a picture for this, we need a picture for this. And I'm like, you know, I've taken like a video screenshot or something. And it's just, it's not as good. And there was no reason to not get the picture taken other than just, you know, like, well, you know, I'm tired, I don't want to do it. And as soon as this is done, let's get them done. Sure, whatever you want to do.
Same. I was like, oh, I got to get new headshots. But first, let me save some money so I can get my hair really done and I can fix my, like, you know, my face was breaking out a little bit before this. So I was like, oh, it's not the time to get headshots. Oh, girl, I'm so mad. I'm so mad at myself. I don't know what I'm going to do.
I'm using ludicrous pictures. The pictures of myself that I'm using are just absolutely silly. But, you know, that's what I got. So
pictures of you on the beach with a bad suntan or no.
Might as well. The one that people keep using where, like, they go to my website or something and they'll take it. They keep using the one I did a Blue Man Group commercial, so I'm all done up in blue makeup. So people keep using that, which is at least funny. So I don't mind because it's amusing looking. But, you know, that's not really a headshot. You can't use that going forward.
I don't know. It works. It hides your flaws. You can't – I mean, it
must – Oh, I look so fat. It was also like it was also like a good 15 plus pounds ago. Like, so, like, I'm not thin now, but I was heavier then. So I really – it's not a good look, but whatever.
This, you're going to come out and everyone's going to be like, oh, my God, you're so hot. What a skinny legend. Look how much weight you've lost.
Yes, exactly. When you were blue, you were just so fat. The blue adds
exactly.
20 pounds easily.
Blue is not your color.
Easily. Easily. So tell me, who are some of your favorite comedians?
Okay, so my favorite comedian is Maria Bamford, and for like personal reasons, I don't think I'm very Maria Bamford in my comedy. Like, my comedy style isn't very similar to hers, but she is my favorite. Like, she's one of those comedians that I'm like, I wish I could do that in my own voice, right?
Right.
Maria Bamford.
Yep. No, I know what you mean.
Like, I really love her the most. But, I mean, as far as, like, a lot of my comedy heroes were just, like, straight white dudes who disappointed me. Like Louis C.K. was my favorite comic, if you would ask me. He was just my favorite. That he was my favorite. Mark Maron was my favorite. I did like a lot of these. I mean, I still love Mark Maron. What am I talking about? I still love Mark Maron. Aziz was also one of my favorites. All my favorites were white dudes that ended up in the news.
What did Mark Maron? Did Mark Maron do something?
No, Mark Maron didn't do anything. Mark Maron didn't do nothing. Mark Maron didn't do nothing.
What did he do? Who did Mark Maron
so
do something terrible to?
I'm still listening to him. I'm still good. We're still good. Me and Mark Maron are still cool. But, like, the rest of the ones that I would consider my faves that were kind of, like, summarily, you know, ticked off. But I guess for now, I mean, I do love me some Tig Notaro. I love me Yvonne Orji's new special is coming out. I'm pretty excited about that. I love
What was that name? Yvonne Orji?
Yeah, Yvonne Orji is coming out. She's on Insecure. And she's kind of like, but she was a comic for a long time before she got the role on Insecure. You know, HBO's Insecure. Do you get HBO? You got somebody?
Yeah. No, I know. I haven't seen the show, but I know it.
You haven't seen Insecure? Oh, so I haven't seen season four at all because I haven't.
It's up to season four already. Jesus.
I know. Oh, God, yeah. But she's a good comic. She's a great comic. Paris Sachet. I really love her. I think she's like an amazing icon of like Black femme queer comedy and also being just super dirty and hilarious. That she's a big hero of mine. I'm kind of like I like a lot of people. I like a lot of people. We could be here all day. I did.
You're doing good. This is a good list. It's Larry Wilmore's involved in that show. I didn't realize that. He is amazing.
Yes, he's amazing. I think he's like one of the big producers like that actually made the show come to fruition, right? I think that
he's a guy who can make a show happen. Yeah, like she's obviously having a terrific career, but at the time that show started, I think she was not, you know, someone who could greenlight something.
No, the only thing she had was the Misadventures of Awkward Black Girl on YouTube, which is a great.
That's right. She was a YouTube. She was a YouTube person.
Yeah, and that was a great series, but a huge departure from what actual Insecure turned out to be. But it's also like a fun, silly thing. I love that series, and that title. I don't know what I'm going to do with my life. She took that title from me. I don't know what I'm going to do.
No, it's Insecure.
The Misadventures of Awkward Black Girl. What a great name for anything.
Oh, okay.
That was my memoir title. What am I going to do?
It's a good title. It's a good title. I don't know. That's you'll have to think of something else, cuz she's definitely taking it. But all right. So have you you've done the virtual open mics or not so much?
Yeah, I've been doing the virtual open mics. I've been doing a few of them. I've been doing, like, I hosted a few. I did Don't Call Me Sweetie. I did the Monday Mic Marathon, the Felicia Madison, the Westside Comedy Club's Monday Mic Marathon.
Yep, I did that.
I've done Firestarters a lot. Let's see. Oh, Firestarters again tonight. I keep forgetting. I've done, like, a few here and there, and I've hosted two, and like I've been doing some of these virtual shows. That has been, it's been really good. It's been like a nice little respite from me in my own brain. That's been nice. From spending time with myself, it's been nice.
So I mean, I think there's a story in your trip abroad. I mean, that you're going. I mean, except you said you did not get up on the open mic stages there.
I did not at all. I just went.
See, in the movie, I think you need to, if you don't mind a bit of a pitch. I feel like that's a good. I feel like that's a good movie. Don't you think? I think that
you're
would be really fun.
Right. It's way more interesting than me traveling all the way to Bangkok to not go up, which is what I did, to sign up for mics and then go no.
Well, but it's hard. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, you know, it took me a long time. I mean, I'm you know, almost 50. I mean, it took me, you know, my entire life to be able to start doing this. And it really took, like, somebody dragged me into a class, and then I realized, I was like, oh, I've always written jokes. Like, I just never got up and performed them. But when it came time to do that first 5 minutes, I was like, well, let me see what I got. I went back through my notebooks, and I realized I had a bunch of jokes. You know, most of them I'm not doing anymore, but, you know, it's
jokes.
Like the thing that I do.
Oh, wow. See, I used to say jokes. I was that kid that, like, you know, had a little comment back and forth about my name or about a thing. And, you know, I had a little snappy comeback, but I never sat down and wrote jokes, right? I'd written, like, little scripts and I'd written, of course, stories and essays and blah, blah, blah. But I never sat down and wrote jokes. And when I finally was like, all right, I'm going to open mic and I'm going to write jokes, I was like, I have no jokes. You know what I mean? Or anything I wrote was just stupid and terrible, which is part of it. And I didn't realize, like, oh, no, you're just going to be – it's just going to be bad. And you just have to deal with that. And I think that's made me so much stronger in so many ways. When you go up and you bomb, you're like, oh, I survived that.
Yes, exactly. But that's what it really is. It's all about doing it and then surviving it. I mean, you talk about, you know, mics that are toxic or, you know, bombing on a show or whatever. I mean, that a great comedian that I know, Eric Marino. He's written for a whole bunch of shows, and he says, always remember you're not on fire. And I thought that was really good advice because you feel like you're on fire, right?
Yeah.
Like you feel like you're on fire, but you're not. You know, it's okay. It's not a big deal. You're going to be fine.
Yeah, I mean, that's so funny. I think that's good advice for literally anything in life. Remember you're not on fire.
Yes, exactly.
My go-to response to any mild inconvenience is, I'm on fire. That is some solid advice. Thank you, Eric Marino.
Eric is the best. Eric is terrific. He's on Facebook. I don't think he's on Twitter or Instagram, which you got to be these days. Are you big on the social medias? Are you into that?
I mean, I'm just getting back into Twitter. Instagram I'm on. I'm building on Instagram. Facebook, all my aunties are on Facebook. I don't understand why all the comedy things on Facebook. They're like, can you tag and share? And I'm like, I don't need my aunties to hear me talking about titties. It's just not.
That's a different problem.
But, you don't have that problem?
I was going to say, that's a legitimate problem. Oh, no, that's a real problem. My mother's on Facebook.
Okay.
So, you know, like that's where all the family members are. So if I do, I did a joke about a family event recently, and I realized I don't want to do this. Like, I can do this at an open mic, but I don't want to do this recorded so that it'll end up, you know, being broadcast on here. That's no good.
Has your family seen you do comedy? Like,
For the most part, my stuff is very directed at myself. You know, like it's really me, my kids, my wife. Things are starting to creep in, especially with quarantine. Things are kind of, with quarantine, I'm a little bit more like, meh, you know, like whatever. I don't really care. Especially at Mike. Yeah, like we're all trapped inside. We're all trapped inside. Yeah. There's a global pandemic. Were you offended by my joke? Wah.
Exactly. What are you going to do? You're going to fight me? You're going to fight me? Go sit
down. Exactly. I have to wear a mask when I go outside, okay? If I can't say my dopey joke, what is the point?
That is right. Absolutely right. Oh, my God. How old are your kids?
My kids are older. They're 14 and 19.
Okay, so are you homeschooling the 14-year-old right now?
Yeah, I am. Luckily, he's a good kid. He's not really requiring a lot of intervention. So as far as we know, we checked over stuff. So to the best of our knowledge, he is doing what he's supposed to do. You know,
to the best of knowledge. Yeah, you just got to hope that he's smarter than y'all. That's all it is.
Yep. Not too much, but yes, absolutely. No, I mean, look, I don't know what this is. I mean, it's not a lost entire year, but I mean, the year is definitely not. What are they going to do? Are they going to fail them? I mean, because their internet connection's not good enough. I mean, it's art. I wouldn't want to be in that. I wouldn't want to be a teacher in all this. That would be super annoying.
Oh my God. Like, and then I wouldn't want to be a teacher. I would not want to be a parent during all this. Like,
yes, you literally just said one of my jokes. That is literally a line from one of my routines. I don't even want to be a parent right now. You got it. This has been
fun,
and I am so grateful to Rebecca for putting us together. Can you tell people where to find you on the social medias?
Yes, please find me on Twitter at Sharia Did That. Sharia, Sheria Did That. On Instagram, Sharia Mattis Comedy. Again, Sheria Mattis Comedy. Please don't find me on Facebook.
Please don't find you on Facebook. Oh yeah, what is your preferred? Is there one that you're more active on?
For sure, but please follow me on Twitter. Please follow me on Twitter. I have three.
I'm gonna follow you on Twitter right now.
Oh my goodness, I have four followers. also, May 29th, so I run a queer femme POC comedy show in the Before Times. Oh, I see it. In the Before Times, it's called Loud Bitch Comedy. I don't know if you'll be able to say this on the podcast.
You can.
Loud Bitch Comedy. We are coming back. We are bouncing back after the nightmares on Zoom. May 29th, Friday, May 29th, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Hit up Loud Bitch Comedy on Instagram to see what's up. And
great.
If you follow me, I will stalk you. Please.
All right. Fantastic. Thank you so much for coming on. Everyone, please stay safe. We'll be back tomorrow at 11 a.m.
Yes. Thank you so much. Thank you so much, Brett. Please stay safe. Take care.
Thank you.
Thank you.